From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Today on the program, Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams on the high risk of wildfire as Utah's drought conditions continue, and on a new initiative to improve early childhood education.
Well, this is a scenario where doing the right thing morally is also the right thing financially. We want those kids to have an equal opportunity and a shot in life that my kids have.
Also, in an op-ed in the Salt Lake Tribune this morning, Utah Senator Orrin Hatch says he'll vote for the immigration reform legislation before the Senate. That and a local news summary just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. First, this world news from the BBC. Welcome to the second day of KCPW's new news and information show, The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Here on the program, we look at emerging stories, current events, politics, and ideas, and we feature conversations with local newsmakers, trailblazers, cultural entrepreneurs, and more. Today, we begin with a look at how biomedical funding cuts are hurting research in science in Utah. For the past decade, the nation's major funder of biomedical research, the National Institutes of Health, has been hit by declining funding. This year's federal budget cuts, known as the sequester, are making matters worse. Now, those budget impacts are starting to be felt in life science and biomedical research communities across the nation, including Utah. KCPW's Kim Shusky brings us this story as part of our partnership with Explore Utah Science.
The budget for the National Institutes of Health has been stagnant for 10 years. That means that every year, the budget is effectively reduced by the cost of inflation, which is about 2.7% for biomedical research. This year, implementation of the sequester budget cuts are amplifying the negative effect on research universities throughout Utah and the U.S. Tom Parks is the vice president for research at the University of Utah. He says 50% of the university's research budget is through funding from NIH.
So we've seen a decrease in research funds coming in from federal sources, so that we expect that research funding for the university will be down somewhere between $35 and $40 million for the fiscal year that ends on June 30th.
To be fair, a small percentage of those dollars are due to the ending of stimulus funds rather than to funding cuts. But according to the most recent study by the Bureau of Business Research at the university, a $40 million reduction will lead to an estimated 256 jobs lost at the university and 656 jobs lost outside of the university.
We have obligations to support graduate students who we bring into graduate programs, and we obviously have obligations to support the base salaries of tenured faculty members. So the cuts often fall on other research workers for whom we don't have those kind of obligations, postdocs, research associates, and research staff.
I know of a dozen people who have lost their jobs in the past year or are worried about losing their jobs this year. Four of them talked to me about their experience.
And I've been working in research about 14 years now.
Been doing research about 25 years, almost 30.
I worked in the Department of Pathology at the University of Utah, and I worked in that position for 14 years.
Officially, since 1987, that's when I did my graduate work. So that's like, 20-something years, 25 years? I don't know. A long time.
That's around 82 years of combined scientific expertise. While most of these scientists want to keep doing research, the reality is that some of them may have to find something else.
I love my work, and I just want to continue doing it.
That's Michael Redd. He's research faculty in the Department of Oncological Sciences. He studies white blood cell development in zebrafish, a model organism used by researchers around the world.
One of the first things that happens to people on chemotherapy is they run out of neutrophils and they get infections, and that is the second biggest killer in cancer, is dying from infection. So understanding how neutrophils are made, how their lifespan is regulated, I think is critical for cancer, but not just cancer, for infections and disease and of all types.
Red says at this point, he's basically volunteering his time to get research studies published so that he will have a better chance when applying for grants to fund his work.
Because I'm a research faculty, I'm required to be a guest in another researcher's lab. And the researcher who I was working with, an MD, PhD, studying T-cell development in zebrafish, and literally wrote, I don't know, maybe 50 or hundreds of grants in the last 6 years, 10 years. And just couldn't get enough money to keep it going.
Rudd says he's not optimistic with the current political climate that things will change anytime soon.
I think I'm a harbinger of things to come. I mean, I think Nick and myself, you know, maybe we weren't quite as organized as some of the other labs, and we suffered first. But it's going to happen to a lot of other labs, and it is happening. I mean, I know a lot of people who aren't getting grants, and, you know, they have 5 or 10 people working for them, and it's incredibly depressing.
Matt is one of those skilled workers who lost his job 6 months ago. He's now working in a lab at an entry-level position that takes less skill and pays 50% less money than his last job.
I lose money every month.
He's still looking for a job in science that will match his expertise, but says he's competing with people that have PhDs who normally wouldn't be applying for this type of job.
And so I've got a BS plus about 14 years experience. You know, the PhDs, they have the academic training on top of the experience. So in some ways, I feel sorry for anybody who's just getting out of school who's going to have to compete against that, because they're competing against people who are just completely overmatching them.
And that raises an uncomfortable question. Are we training too many highly skilled life science and biomedical researchers to meet the current demand? Park says if the funding cuts continue, the impact will be felt far beyond the biomedical world.
The bargain that was worked out after World War II was that the federal government would support basic research, mostly in universities, and companies would focus on later stage applied research and development. And that is really the bargain that has given us much of the wealth in this country since World War II.
He says if we change that, companies will not pick up the cost of doing basic research because there's no benefit to the companies or to their shareholders.
That will mean that the companies won't have the basic research on which to build new products and services, and will be a poorer country.
Park says they are being told that the sequester cuts will likely last through the next budget year, starting on July 1st, and everyone should be prepared to hold on tight. For KCBW and Explore Utah Science, I'm Kim Shusky.
Now we turn to the immigration debate in Washington. Today, Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch announced in an op-ed in the Salt Lake Tribune that he'll vote in favor of the latest immigration reform package, backing off his demands that the reform include a provision compelling undocumented immigrants to pay back taxes. He reiterated his support this afternoon on the Senate floor.
Before there was an immigration bill, and before there was even a Gang of Eight, most senators had three basic beliefs. The immigration system is broken. Fixing it will be neither simple nor easy. And it absolutely needs to be done. I share those beliefs.
15 amendments authored by Senator Hatch have made their way into the final Senate bill, including one provision for harsher penalties for marijuana production on federal lands.
For example, the committee adopted by voice vote my amendment establishing strong penalties for cultivating marijuana on federal lands. Mexican drug cartels are driving the expansion of this plague, using chemicals and diverting water sources that also harm the environment. My amendment will reduce the illegal drugs that enter the market and protect America's natural resources at the same time.
The immigration reform bill seems likely to pass the Senate after a key vote on Monday showed ample support from that body. Senator Hatch has said that while he'll vote for this version of the legislation, he'll also work to see it amended in the House of Representatives, where it faces a less than lukewarm reception. I'm Roger McDonough for KCPW News, and you're listening to The Rundown. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Luke Burbank, host of LiveWire Radio, your weekly dose of humor, stories, music, and questionable pet advice from the likes of comedian Marc Maron.
I took a bunch of shoe boxes, put food in them, trapped 4 of these cats, brought them into my apartment, not knowing they're wild animals. And the saddest part of this story, Luke, is I just wanted friends.
It's LiveWire Radio, coming to KCPW starting June 27th.
Thursdays at noon and Saturdays at 7 p.m.
The 21st season of the Downtown Farmers Market is underway and continues every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Pioneer Park through October 19th. The market features over 250 vendors offering local produce, meats, cheeses, and much more. Details are online at slcfarmersmarket.org. KCPW is a proud sponsor of the 2013 Salt Lake City Downtown Farmers Market.
Now on The Rundown, we turn to a conversation with Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams, who recently announced a new initiative to improve early childhood education. I asked Mayor McAdams about that and other issues in this first of a monthly series. Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams, thanks for joining us. So last week you kicked off an education campaign to assist after-school programs and early education opportunities. It's a $350,000 investment on the part of the county. How are those funds going to be used exactly?
You know, one of the things that I'm very concerned about is the quality of our public schools. My kids attend our neighborhood school, and we will be in the school system for the duration of their education. And I worry about, I think our teachers do a great job with the limited resources we give them, but I worry about our ability to sustain that with as we expect increasingly more out of our teachers to prepare our kids to compete in a global economy, and yet we give them precious fewer and fewer resources to do so. So during my campaign throughout my short tenure so far as Salt Lake County Mayor, have talked about the need for the county to do whatever we can to support our schools. And I've received some criticism for that. People who say, well, it's not a traditional role for the county to be involved in education. And my response is, first and foremost, if this is, I think, the most important issue, one of the most important issues facing our community right now, I'm not content to just say, well, that's somebody else's job and we'll let them do it, because I think we are falling behind. We're failing to do what we need to do to support our schools to make sure that they're sustainable in the future. And if there's a problem facing our community, then it's my problem as much as anybody's. But the county has had a historic role in education as well. One of the things that I feel is important is, look, I'm not going to assert a role in the classroom. There's a proper role for the school districts that I respect. The state provides the bulk of the funding for our schools. But what I can do as Salt Lake County Mayor, and what the county can do, is to help to make sure that when our kids show up to the classroom, when they show up ready to learn. And we can do it. We have some programs in that area. I think we can do a better job. One of the things that the data shows us is, if a kid starts kindergarten behind with an achievement gap, and many times that achievement gap is due to economic circumstances, that child may come from a refugee family where English isn't the native language, and they start in kindergarten behind their peers, and we have a kindergarten class of 25 to 30 kids, the teacher has to choose whether or not they're going to focus on those five refugee kids or the 25 other kids, and somebody's going to not get the attention they deserve in a classroom of that size. Well, what I hope to do through our preschool initiative is to help those five refugee kids show up speaking English and ready to learn, so the teacher's not forced to make that choice. And what the studies have shown, and there have been studies in the Granite School District that have tracked kids like that, that if they can get into a high-quality preschool, then they start kindergarten at the same place as their peers, and there is no achievement gap. They go on to third and fourth grade, which is as far as we've tracked the data. The studies have been going on for about 5 years now. That the kids start school, they're in the third and fourth grade, performing at the same level in math and language arts as their peers. And if they do that, they graduate from high school. They don't get involved, by and large, they don't get involved in gangs and drugs. And that saves us tax dollars.
And the benefits, I mean, the benefits aren't just for, say, refugee children, but for children of the broader community also.
That's right. By and large, we're focusing right now on economically disadvantaged children, that if we can help them start kindergarten in the same place as their peers. So these may be kids whose parents don't read to them, who they don't get the engagement with the parent and others that would help to prepare them for kindergarten. And preschool really can provide that level of engagement that will help them be prepared to start school.
And so I read in an article you said that there would be as much as a 20-to-1 return on the investment. Where do you get that number? What do you expect to see?
Well, this is a scenario where doing the right thing morally is also the right thing financially, that we want those kids to have an equal opportunity at a shot in life that my kids have, and preschool really is that opportunity for them. So if those kids can get in preschool and develop the skills that will carry them through to graduation, our graduation rates in Utah are fairly low right now. If we can help them perform at grade level in third grade, they're going to be making different. They're going to have different choices offered to them, and those choices are graduation and post high school education, whether it's college or other form of career training, that will help them to lead productive lives. Now, I would much rather spend $1 on preschool than $10 on gang intervention, drug rehab, and GRE,
or say prison housing,
Or, yeah. Jailing. Those are expensive endeavors. Now it's a 20. We estimate it could be as much as a 20-to-1 in return on investment for the dollar we spend on preschool, which is kind of a pilot program for us right now. The money that we will be investing in partnership with the United Way and some private sector donors will get about 600 kids through this pilot program. If successful, we hope to forge a partnership with the state of Utah to expand opportunities for preschool.
And is this coming from, I'm thinking of the $350,000, I'm sure that in the county budget it's not the biggest chunk of change, but is that coming from a fund that you have for education?
What I'm proposing is that we enter into an agreement, and this is a concept that's been developed by the United Way, but we would enter into an agreement where we will put the money into an escrow account and enter into a loan with Goldman Sachs and the Pritzker Foundation are talking about repaying this loan. So we'd enter into a loan. If the kids who go into the preschool program are performing at grade level in the third grade, then the county would take the money from that escrow account and repay it. If the program fails, if the kids aren't we don't see a measurable improvement in the kids because of the preschool, then we will have no obligation to repay it. So we'll be taking money from the county general fund, setting it into an account that we may otherwise in the future be spending on drug rehab and gang intervention. And we're going to instead set it aside to repay the loan that makes preschool possible.
But because of the data, you're confident that that's not a loan you'll have to repay. I mean, the historic data showing you that this is an investment well spent.
That's right. This is a data proven concept. Otherwise, we wouldn't have private sector entities at the table willing to take the risk on that. And if it does perform, I'm happy to be investing in preschool instead of gang intervention.
So yesterday, the Annie E. Casey Foundation released its 24th annual Kids Count data book, which measures child well-being. At 14th overall, Utah still ranks among the best, but this is a drop from its third place ranking just 4 years ago. The report looks at 16 different criteria to determine quality of life for children in the U.S., and Utah fell in half of these criteria. One focus of the report is that children are not attending preschool. National average is 54%. Here in the state, it's 60% of children that don't attend preschool. You focused on this issue. What does the drop in stat mean to you?
Well, first of all, our community's changing. Who we are, who we were 20 years ago is not who we are today. And you look at, we live in Salt Lake County in particular, is a county that with a population today of about 1 million. But they tell us we'll double in the next 20 to 30 years. Our diversity is growing. Who we are and the fabric of our community is changing. And many of those kids who don't receive preschool may be at home with a parent who is reading to them and helping them to prepare for kindergarten. And if that's the case, then fantastic. But what we want to provide is an opportunity for kids who may not be receiving that preparation in the home to receive it through a preschool program. My own kids have attended preschool, and we think it's been good for them. And we also try to read to them, but I think they've enjoyed preschool, and I think the studies show that they're better off for it.
And I also know that on the national level, funding for after-school programs has diminished. But part of your campaign seeks to reinstigate some of these programs or to allow some of these programs to continue. What's the benefit of after-school programs?
The county already has numerous after-school programs that we fund and some of them that we run directly. And that also shows that those kids who would otherwise be best case scenario sitting at home in front of a TV and worst case scenario looking for extracurricular activities that may involve gangs and drugs and other things, that if you can put them into an after-school program using the existing school facilities and sometimes even using some of the teachers and other staff at the school, that it's also a very high return on investment. We're not having to invest in the infrastructure, but we're putting kids in a place where they can continue to learn, they can get their homework, avoid falling behind, and go on to graduate from high school.
All right, I'm going to switch topics here. It's been another dry year here in Utah. Let's talk about fire risk. Summer arrived on Friday, fireworks went on sale on Saturday, and you've been trying to get the word out about taking preventative measures to keep people and property safe. What do we need to know?
Yeah, this is it's a scary year for us. They tell us we're in the third year of a drought, so we had severe conditions last year that led to numerous fires that threatened homes here in Salt Lake County. In fact, a year ago right now, we had a forest fire a wildfire out in the Harriman area that was pretty scary. So we are under those same conditions, probably worse when you consider some of the dry
materials that are out there that could start a fire. So we're asking people to please be careful. This is a scary time. Please be responsible in how you enjoy the 4th of July holiday. Please look at unifiedfire.org or any of the city websites. We'll have information about where fireworks are banned. They're banned in some of those sensitive areas where you could start a forest fire that would endanger lives and homes.
Great. Mayor McAdams, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams. The full interview can be heard as part of this program at our website, kcpw.org. Tomorrow on the program, we have Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank talking immigration and guns.
There are people who intend to kill and injure other individuals that have access to firearms, and they're doing just that. That is what is really a disgrace, that we are unwilling to deal with some of the facts that hit us right in the face on a regular basis.
We'll also look at the decision expected tomorrow morning from the Supreme Court on the Defense of Marriage Act and Proposition 8, plus President Obama's new measures to combat climate change. All that and more coming up tomorrow on The Rundown from KCPW.
This is Aaron Moulton from the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art. UMOCA's inaugural Utah Biennial will present an index of Utah-related contemporary art, culture, and folklore. It will underline the state's contributions within regional, national, and international cultural dialogues. Forgotten icons, cultural lore, and parallel art worlds will be explored as over 100 artists and exhibitions take over the museum throughout the rest of the year. More information at utahmoca.org. KCPW is pleased to be a sponsor of UMOCA's exhibition opening receptions.
Hi, I'm Andrew Shaw with the City Library. The City Library promotes open access to information, materials, and services to all members of the community. By offering events and services for all ages throughout the year, the City Library strives to advance knowledge, foster creativity, encourage the exchange of ideas, build community, and enhance the quality of life in Salt Lake City. More information about collections, services, and events at the City Library is available at our website, slcpl.org.
Support for KCPW comes from XMission, Utah's local source for internet services, now celebrating 20 years in business. XMission offers advanced website and email hosting, connections, digital phone systems, and more. Information is available online at xmission.com.
That's full time for The Rundown today. The Rundown was produced with help from Lauren Colucci, Jesse Ellis, and Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us today on The Rundown from KCPW. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next. Stay tuned.